This is James from Survival Punk.
And this is Mike.
Bringing you episode number 5 of the Survival Punk Podcast.
Well, looks like today we're going to be talking about some lying marketers, some kind of a contest, a few words from our sponsors. Got news stories coming out of both New York and the Ukraine today. We're going to be talking a little bit about fire starting under various weather conditions. We're going to have Mike's movie pick. Little talk about CrossFitting, and we're going to be starting a new segment on the show, Prepping 101. It's going to be a weekly series. Don't know how long that's going to last, but here we go. After that, we're doing my celebrity invite, and that would be about it, I guess. James, how was your week going?
Not too bad. I got a couple announcements to make for the week.
Oh, this I got to hear.
First, I'm running a Facebook contest, and I'll probably make a blog post to update it, and then I'm going to mention it here. So, I'm doing a photo contest for Ladies of Survival Punk. So, ladies, submit your pictures to either Facebook Survival Punk or James at survivalpunk.com.
Now, is this going to be going up for that 2015 calendar you were talking about?
No, the calendar kind of got put on hold. It didn't work out well with my photographer. We had issues. I was trying to do it too fast. So the calendar didn't work out. But the photo contest is going to work out. And the lucky lady that is the winner will be getting a NRA membership.
Now, what are we going to be looking for in this photo contest exactly? What do these ladies need to give you?
Guns are a plus, because I am giving away an NRA membership, the National Rifle Association. It's a Facebook contest, so you can't send me your nudies. You can send me your nudies, but you can't use that for the contest. And creativity is a big plus on this one. If you're wearing survival gear, plate carriers, you're funnily using paracord, then that's all bonus points. Creativity is a big bonus on this.
And wink, wink, you're almost guaranteed at least a runners-up spot if you're wearing something that might say Survival Punk on it. So
there are a couple ladies out there that do have Survival Punk shirts.
And where can they get more Survival Punk shirts?
You can buy them directly from me. I think I'm out of ladies' shirts, maybe. And you can also buy them from Survival Gear Bags. No, not Survival Gear Bags. Kelly's other shop. TSP Gear Shop. You can buy them there as well.
Alrighty then.
You do get bonus points for being a redhead too, though. Kind of a kryptonite.
Alrighty then.
Okay. And the other thing I had to talk about was, a couple weeks ago I got an email, james@survivalpunk.com. I occasionally get sort of off the wall make money scheme emails. Besides all the forward emails of making products and vacuum cleaners and stuff.
Yeah, princes in Nigeria, that sort of thing.
I do get a couple of those.
Oh, okay.
So I got an email on a money-making scheme where I would use my email list, those people that subscribe to the Survival Punk email list, for evil, basically, sending out a fake email to you people trying to get you to click through this link. It's a click scam. Not a click scam, but click marketing. It's click marketing. So to click through to their webpage, and I respond to them like I do most everybody. I don't do click marketing. I don't use my email list for evil. I email it when I put out a new podcast and when I put out a blog post. Sometimes I'll use it when I'm doing a contest, so you guys know there's a contest, so you can get updated on. But other than that, I don't use the email list for anything else. And I'm not going to allow other people to use it for bad like that. So, I told them that, and I was like, if you want to – I mean, it's a good company. I respected them. But I told them that I am up for advertising, and I would be willing to talk to them about that. But I'm not up for selling my email list for them to sell clicks. Well, just a couple days after that, I got an email from a list I was subscribed on, and I won't name names here for any of the people involved, but I was reading the email, and it just kind of came off kind of hokey. Like, the email was like, hey, so I came across this article, and I was reading it, and I think you should check it out, you know, and like, it makes you think like this, and they had the link, and I recognized the link as the site they wanted me to click to. So I was like, my bullshit meter immediately went off, and I was like, okay, they sold their list. My respect for these people, which is kind of iffy in the first place,
right,
went real down. Like, I immediately was like, okay, these people, they recently built a very large email subscriber list, and now they're using it for evil. Like, so they have no respect for me anymore, and I just don't appreciate that. I respect each and every one of my email subscribers, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to sell them out for bullshit.
Now, speaking of selling people out for bullshit, you want to tell them who that was that sold you out there?
Nope, I'm not going to name names here. I'm sure people have. A lot of these people are probably subscribed to the same email list, and I'm sure they got that email.
Oh, okay. Well, looks like it's time for a word from our sponsor, JM Bullion.
All right, and we've got. I'd like to thank JM Bullion. They were my biggest and best advertiser as far. They sell silver and gold coins online at jmbullion.com.
Silver and gold, they never depreciate.
Well, it jumps around. It's sort of volatile, but it's an awesome hedge for your money, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about later, why you should invest in silver and gold. I'm more heavily in silver. I've got quite a bunch of silver at home. Not much gold. It's still too pricey for me.
Right.
But if you have not got any silver, or if you're looking to add some silver, JM Bullion's an awesome place to do that with awesome prices. And I'll explain to you later why you should be investing in silver, even if you think you shouldn't.
Okay, now where can they find JM Bullion?
Either jmbullion.com or head to survivalpunk.com and look at the banners on the right-hand margin.
JM Bullion. All right. Now let's move right into our news stories for the week. Looks like we're going to be talking about some tax-free zones in New York. You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I was so I was at the gym the other day, Mike. Not my normal CrossFit gym, but I went to a an anytime fitness kind of gym, Snap Fitness, and was just kind of doing a quick workout for the day.
Yeah, my gym's the International House of Pancakes.
Yes, it is. So, and I saw this thing on the news, or on one of the TVs, you know, obviously on mute, I couldn't see what they're talking about, but it was like talking about New York having tax-free zones coming up, which is just kind of blew me off, because New York is not a very business-friendly state. They're anti-gun, they're just a bad state, and they're going bankrupt, so maybe this is what kicked off the idea. So I took the note down to look it up and talk about it on Survival Punk Podcast. So I've got the article pulled up here. So let me sort of skim through it and read a little bit to you real quick. New York's plan to attract new business and jobs to the state by offering them tax-free space at public colleges is underway. Officials Tuesday outlined for the first time specifics about how the program will work. They try to lay out the plan as simply as possible. There's no fine print, no trips, and no traps, no caveats, there's no taxes, explained Executive Vice President of Startup NY, Leslie Whatley, in a conference call with reporters. Blah, 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 blah. Some private, I think friendly competition. New jobs will...
He's paraphrasing.
Sacrificers. The application process will start in January. Startup NY plan has drawn criticism from conservatives and business leaders. They say the program doesn't address the problems of too high taxes for existing companies. Not really reading through the program or learning much about it. it actually looks like for once New York is doing something pretty smart here. After lots of bad business decisions and continuing bad business decisions, this might be something kind of positive. Might bring them a little bit of money. I mean, they're a stupid state and they're running out gun friendly businesses left and right and gun friendly people. But, you know, this might do something good for them.
The whole gun-friendly business thing is a good idea. I've never understood one thing. I mean, occasionally you'll come upon a business, large corporations actually, that prohibit the carrying of guns. Even legal guns, people with carrying concealed permits, they're not allowed into the store.
Which is very anti... I mean, as a private business, I believe they should have the right... I just don't particularly care for that, right? It means you as a company don't care for the Second Amendment and aren't very well informed.
Well, plus, I mean, just as a practical point of view, think about it. The only people that it's going to keep from carrying guns into the business are ones that were not planning on robbing it in the first place.
Right, and more than in a lot of these mass shootings, the people that stop them are people there on the scene that happen to be concealed carry holders. The New York, there was a mall shooting that where a concealed carry holder stopped the gunman. A movie shooting. So lots of these times they're stopped by people who legally can carry the weapon, which is the point of carrying a weapon legally, is to protect yourself and protect the others around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically, by putting that sign up, you're making it a more deadly, more scary place. I mean, really, that's what you're doing. Only criminals take guns into gun-free zones.
Exactly. Now, about the tax-free zone in New York, I'm not sure if I completely understood everything. Does that mean they're not going to be charging sales tax? Or the businesses that are starting in those zones are not going to be taxed?
The plan was first announced by Governor Andrew Cuomo early this year as tax-free zones. The idea is to let companies start on or locate to property owned by the state. Mostly SUNY campuses, and not have to pay state or local taxes for 10 years. So it's for the businesses that are opening there. Because the business taxes in New York are pretty hefty, which makes it really hard to start a business in New York. Most businesses choose to start in some place more friendly. Tennessee, Texas.
You don't really hear about large companies starting in New York. You hear about them eventually showing up there, though.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be a really good place for business, trade, and international trade. I don't know about it anymore. I think the Big Apple is kind of going rotten.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to move from the Big Apple all the way over to the Ukraine here for our next news story. Now, there's a lot of unrest happening over there, and I know we talked about this a few weeks back, but it bears repeating because things are getting pretty serious over there. Am I correct?
Right. The events going on in the Ukraine in Kiev, I'm keeping a pretty close eye on it. It's one of the things that I'm watching the closest right now, and it has a lot of implications. So before I jump into this article, I was listening to a radio show on the way home the other day, and basically the protesters in Kiev, the Ukraine, finally they ousted their evil tyrant of a president. So toppling Yanukovych, which kind of pissed off, and I can't remember his name, the president of Russia. The president of Russia is really interesting because he was Yanukovych was more or less a puppet of his.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that the people of Kiev didn't like, the oppression from Russia. So Russia's trying to move in and basically retake control of Kiev under Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, it seems like some people in America are fighting this or trying to get involved there. Russia's not happy about that, and we're borderline about to go back to a cold war with Russia.
Wow.
Or even an open war. Like, it's like Kiev's about to break down into like civil war, and then it may drag the rest of the world, at least the United States, into either a cold war or an out and out open war, which we do not want a war with Russia. We don't need a war anyway. We've had too much damn war, and I'm tired of it.
We've been at war with one country after the next for my entire life, at least, as long as anybody can remember.
I mean, I remember
our country was founded on war, actually.
Well, yeah. So, jumping into the article here is, let me read through it. Ukraine's Euromaidan movement is in control of the capital. The autocratic and ostrich-raising president Viktor Yanukovych has fled Kiev, and the Ukrainian parliament has voted him out of power. For now, it's a dramatic victory for the protesters who have sought closer ties with the European Union and an end to the corruption represented by Yanukovych. It's especially stunning to consider the protesters had, on several occasions, seemed close to defeat. But to understand why the protesters succeeded in toppling Yanukovych, it's worth taking a glance at its strategies and the military-style tactics the protesters not only built a broad and inclusive coalition, but innovated where it mattered most, on the streets. Really, it turned medieval. Protesters shot fireworks with makeshift launchers in combination with throwing stones using slingshots. They overwhelmed disorientated Berkut Special Forces units, who were pelted with flying objects and as fireworks exploded around them. Protesters wore military helmets and carried makeshift or captured shields. Wooden boards were used to protect their lower legs from shrapnel the police taped to exploding stun grenades. Among the array of homemade weapons, some were perhaps a little too ambitious. A crude trebuchet, a type of medieval catapult which uses a counterweight to fling objects, was overrun and dismantled
to shield themselves from the onslaught. The police special forces units, known as Berkut, adopted distinct testudo formations. This packed shield formation was used by the Roman Empire, developed to shield infantry units from arrows. The first line holds its shields forward, with each preceding line holding their shields skyward. The problem with this tactic, it makes you much slower.
So, not to keep reading, but I know, I saw a video, and it's pretty amazing, where it was an armored assault vehicle coming towards the protesters, and you see flung through the air like 100 Molotov cocktails, and the machine and their tank went up, done, taken out by Molotov cocktails. The power of the Molotov cocktail, Mike.
I'm guessing those were not the million points of light that George Bush originally told us about.
No. So, it kind of gives me hope and a lot of fear at the same time that if the military state of America ever turns on the people, there's a lot of improvised ways we can fight back. We are a very armed country.
Oh, you realize how many people in this country have guns, legally and illegally?
Yes. One of the quotes from, I think, Japan's prime minister during World War II was, "I'm not going to invade America. There is a rifle behind every blade of grass."
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have that as well. I mean, but knowing that we could take out, well, I guess Ukrainian armored vehicles with Molotov cocktails, because we have no shortage of liquor here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure that Ukraine has their share of vodka. We've got lots of liquor stores in every corner here.
I mean, think about it. That's why they had to create an entire bureau of the government. The alcohol.
Yeah.
The ATF.
The Bureau of Don't Trade Stuff.
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
All the big barter stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, if you've not been keeping up with what's going on in the Ukraine, definitely check it out. It's getting scary there.
Yes, very scary indeed, my friend. Let's move on to a lighter subject and to get back to why we're here in the first place and why it's called Survival Punk. We're going to move right into our survival tip of the week, and this week we're going to be talking about starting fires under various weather conditions.
Right. I strongly feel that you should practice your fire-making skills in a wide variety of weather conditions. Not just, hey, it's a nice, pretty, warm summer day, I'm going to go outside and build a fire.
Yeah, you're never going to just, I mean, well, not never, but you're not always going to find that one place that's loaded with dry timber.
Right.
Dry fire starting material, anything like that. I mean, what happens if you're stranded in the swamp?
Right. So, if you've not had that practice then, when you do need to make a fire and you are in a swamp or it's after a rainstorm, the ground is wet, all the trees on the ground, all the branches, all the pieces of wood are wet.
Are you in a heavy snow situation, anything like that?
Here in Tennessee, I've not encountered a lot of snow making chances.
I used to be that way, but whatever.
Yeah, not in the past several years have I had a chance to make a snow fire.
Yeah, not here in the snow dome.
So it's not something I worry about too much, but if we do get big snow, I will go outside and make fire. Tonight, I was over here at Mike's house, and I decided to cook some steaks for dinner, and I went out in his yard, started gathering material from the yard, which was mostly all damp on the ground. And so starting the fire wasn't as easy as it could be, but because I have practiced making fires with substandard equipment before, with bad wood, it didn't slow me down too much. I got the fire going pretty quickly with an audience from Mike's kids in the window.
Now, what would you say would be your recommended tip for having to start a fire with wet materials or damp materials?
You're gonna want to get the dampest materials to be on the outside of your fire, because as the inside drier and stuff. So find the driest materials you can, and that's what you want to build your fire with. Because once it gets going, the heat from that will dry out the wetter stuff.
Exactly.
A tip that I learned from YouTuber Nothing Fancy, which is why when I go out for camping, I carry a very large survival knife, a Buck Hoodlum, 11 inches in total. I use that to process wood to get to the inside of it where it's still nice and dry. The outside stuff may be a little damp, but for the most part, it's still dry on the inside. If it's really been raining a lot, go around and look for standing deadwood. It'll still be fairly dry. Dead branches that are still up in the tree, you can break them off and get to it. For the most part, though, I just process and get to the middle where it's still nice and dry. So that's the biggest thing. And just practice. Just practice to learn your materials, and then just do it.
Now, what would you recommend if somebody was, like, say, in a pretty windy area?
You want to build a wind block. Get some rocks. Get a really big log if you can, and build behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, you happen to have cinder blocks laying out there, so I use that.
Well, we've used those actually to do some, basically made a homemade barbecue grill out of cinder blocks and an old grill grating at one point.
Right.
Cooked some pretty good ribs on it, as I recall.
Yeah. So, you know, you improvise and you learn what works and you learn what don't. So, get out there and start making fires.
Okay.
And not just when it's pretty.
No.
I've built fires in the rain, and that's a pain in the ass. But that's some of the times that you need the fire the most.
I can just imagine you out there building a fire in the rain. You got to do that for me at some point. I got to see that.
One time I was out with my buddies hiking. They have a website. I haven't checked to see if they've updated in a while, but the website is skillsandgear.com, and it was James and Mike over there. And we were hiking here in Nashville, and I'd brought along my alcohol fuel cans.
Wait, you mean there's another set of James and Mike out there?
There is another James and Mike.
That
I didn't even think about it. Yeah, James and Mike from skillsandgear.com.
That kind of annoys me a little bit, and I was annoyed by the movie. I was annoyed by Monster Zeek, because those two main characters are James and Mike.
It's a good combination.
Apparently so.
Tried and true.
It just works.
Yes. So I had my alcohol fuel can stoves out there, and I had not field tested them at this time. I'd use them in my house. I'd use them, like, you know, here and there, you know, like doing stuff. But I hadn't took them out testing them on the trail before, and they utterly failed.
Really?
It was so cold that day, and it was windy, even in, like, the little bricked-off area we made, and I couldn't get them to work.
Hmm.
So, I carry now a pocket rocket stove, which has always worked, and I've taken it out. I brought it here tonight, and I made tea with it.
Yes, yes, you did.
So, and burnt myself a little bit.
Like a genius.
Yeah, I reached down to turn it off, and I touched the handle on it, but
pure brilliance at work.
So yeah, practice making fires in every practice, test all your gear and fire making stuff in all forms of weather.
Right, exactly. You don't want to take something out there with you untested. You want to know how to work every piece of gear you got.
Don't leave it in the package because you don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah, become an expert on your stuff is what we're saying right here.
So up next, we've got Mike's movie pick of the week. So, now, Mike, what do you have this week?
Well, my survival movie pick of the week is going to be a little bit unorthodox, and people are going to be what WTF made at me.
All right.
But believe it or not, my survival movie pick of the week this week, Crocodile Dundee. Not many people would think of this, well, that's a comedy or that's a fish out of water movie. But if you think about it, the first one? Yeah, the very first one. Now, the first half of this movie really, I mean, it's basically him talking about how he survived after being attacked by a crocodile.
Right, which is a survival situation for sure. Right. In the outback, in the bush, right?
Right, and it actually did have some good tips in there. One of the places that he found where he could get a lot of food at was a place that was where it was full of fresh water and fresh mineral water at that. It's a widely known fact. Crocs stay away from mineral water. It does not they don't mix with that. So that's
interesting.
I mean, that's an interesting tip. I mean, not that I'm ever going to be out in the Australian outback, right, but some of our listeners might be. And you know, if there's mineral water around, you're pretty much in a croc-free zone. And he taught a little bit about spearfishing and all that. And plus, the second half of the movie was all a little bit about urban survival. Right. I mean, he was thrown into a situation that he couldn't handle. Basically, handled it with a lot of drinking and, hitting people, but still.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
I like his philosophy of carrying a big knife.
Yes, he does.
Big survival knives are where it's at. I'm not a fan of the small 3 to 4 inch bushcrafting blade. I have Moiras. I gave Mike a Moira. But no, I like a big survival knife.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what he carries since that famous scene. That's not a knife.
Yeah.
That's a knife.
That's absolutely, big knives are where it's at.
Yep. Well, that it. Crocodile Dundee. If you haven't seen it, then you're either born well after the early part of the 80s or you've just been living under a rock. Find it. Crocodile Dundee, starring Paul Hogan and Linda Kozlowski. And I think now it's time to talk about Black River Outpost for the week.
All right. Up next, we've got Black River Outpost. They are my newest sponsor this time. They sell all your prepper and tactical needs. Magpul magazines, fire starters, and anything else you could possibly want in the prepper, tactical, survival world. Check them out. They are family-owned and operated up in Michigan.
And how can they find them, James?
BlackRiverOutpost.com, or, as always, stop by SurvivalPunk.com and check out the banners on the right-hand margin.
Alrighty then. I think it's about time for Nutrition Corner. What have we got on the chopping block this week, so to speak?
Okay, we've got a couple things this week. Today, actually, as we're recording this, is Thursday the 27th, which happens to be the announcement of the first 2014 CrossFit Games Open workout. So, CrossFit Games, like I've told you recently, Mike, I've gotten pretty involved and love CrossFitting, and CrossFit has their own games. I actually went back and watched a couple years worth of the CrossFit games.
Now, it doesn't really sound like fun and games to me, because every time you talk to me about your CrossFit, you basically tell me that you just spent God only knows how long getting your ass kicked.
Right, and love every minute of it. The workouts that I've seen them do in the CrossFit games are brutal beyond anything I could possibly imagine. I would die in a CrossFit games workout. So, that said, I signed up for the Opens. I am going to be a contestant in the Opens, along with many thousands of other people throughout the entire world.
Now, what do you think it's going to entail? Do you have any idea? I mean, have you seen these before? I mean, what's going to be going on?
I'm going to tell you what the first workout is, because it was just announced, and I was kind of waiting all day for it.
Okay.
A little pre-information here. 2014, the athletes will have until Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time of each week to perform the workout and submit their scores. Scores have to be done in front of judges or videoed. I'm going to do my course at my CrossFit gym, CrossFit Barefoot, shout out. The first workout is a 10-minute AMRAP. That's as many reps as possible in 10 minutes.
That's my understanding. Chuck Norris can do one of those in about 2.5 minutes. Is that right?
5 minutes is what I hear. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's for a 20.
Yeah.
Be fair.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the first workout at the CrossFit Open, which I will do tomorrow and do terribly, is 30 double unders. So double under, Mike, because I know you don't know what one is.
I have no clue what a double under is. Sounds kind of kinky, though.
Kind of. When you, it's incredibly difficult. I cannot do it. So it's a jump rope. So you jump rope, but every time, so you jump high enough to pass the rope under you twice.
Oh, okay. I've seen people do that.
Yeah. So 30 double unders.
I did it in a dream one time.
I have successfully done one double under at a time. It'll go under me twice, and then it'll hit my foot coming around the third time, because I'll fall down, and I can't hit the ground and jump back. So I can't do double unders yet.
I've really got to go to CrossFit with you, just to sit there and eat popcorn.
We'd kick you out, because that's not paleo. And the second part of the AMRAP is 15 power snatches at either 75 pounds for men or 55 pounds for ladies.
Power snatches. This just keeps getting kinkier.
Yeah. So, 75 power snatch.
But what exactly is a power snatch?
It's an Olympic lift where you take the barbell from the ground to overhead in a wide grip behind your head.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them do that. I also saw a guy blow out his arm that way before.
Yeah. So it's 10 minutes of as many of those as you can get done. 30 double unders, 15 power snatches. I'm going to, of course, have to do single unders, so I'll be doing 60 single unders, and then 15 power snatches. So, I'm hoping to get three rounds? I'm hoping to get three rounds tomorrow.
Dude, I'm tired, and you were just talking about it.
Yeah. So, the workout I did today was trying to get my single one rep maxes for my front squat. And front squat and what? Oh, push press. So front squat, I've actually got that one rep max before when I first started there. So about 2 months ago.
No, what do you mean maxing a rep? What does that mean?
It's a weight heavy enough that you can only perform it one time before you're tired. You can't do another rep.
So what was your weight on that?
Originally, I went in there, and I believe I got a 125 front squat.
Wow.
Today, I got a 165. A 165 front squat.
I'm pretty sure I could do a 1.65 front squat.
I'm sure you could do more than that.
You overestimate me.
No. So, yeah, I was pretty proud to... I started CrossFit in December. It's now February, then in February, and I've gained 20 pounds of strength on a lift.
Yeah, and like half of that's all in that one vein I saw pop out in your arm earlier.
I'm impressed. I'm starting to get a little veiny.
Yes.
That's the impressive part there, yeah.
Getting big and veiny.
So, I love CrossFit. I'm getting some serious strength gains there. Mm-hmm. And, So when I signed up for the Open, obviously I knew I was not going to go to regionals. But they really encourage you, CrossFit does, not my box, my gym. CrossFit gyms are called boxes. Because I think I'm the only one there that signed up besides the coach, Nick, Nick's going to perform really well. And people of all walks of life sign up for the Opens. Old ladies, super overweight people, out of shape people. This is worldwide. Like, there's several thousand people signing up. I think 75,000.
Mm-hmm.
I could check, but yeah, it's a lot of people that signed up for it.
Now, you know, I've only heard of CrossFit over the last, since last year, to be honest with you, but how long has it been going on? I mean, how long has CrossFit been a thing?
I think the CrossFit Games have been going on for the past 10 years.
Really?
I mean, they're now starting to get pretty darn big. So Gary Glassman, the creator of CrossFit, it's probably been 15 or 20 years, maybe.
Huh.
I mean, it started out as small, like, you know, in California, and it started to grow, and now it's worldwide all over the place.
Huh. Kind of like Jack in the Box.
Only healthier.
Huh. There you go.
So, yeah, obviously, I don't expect to... I am interested, because my scores will go up on the leaderboard with everyone else that's entered, and I can see where I rank against everybody that signed up for the Open in CrossFit.
Now, if you want to see James's scores up on the leaderboard,
I will post it. I will post my public profile in the show notes of this episode.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
So you'll see how I perform, and you can track it. And if you're a CrossFitter, we can compete.
Yeah, so stay.
You'll probably beat me, but I like competition.
Well, stay tuned for further details on that, and I look forward to seeing this. I really do.
Right.
All right, well, I think it's time for our new segment that we're starting this week called Prepping 101.
Right, I felt it was time now on episode 5 to sort of go back to basics for survival and prepping, which is really what the show's about, which I consider nutrition and fitness a big part of that. Mm-hmm. But we're going to go back to the very basics of survival, what we call Survival Prepping 101 series. When I was making the outline, I expected to knock out pretty much all of this in one episode, and I realized it would be a long, long episode, and it would take way more than an episode.
Which is why this is going to become at least a weekly series for the foreseeable future, I would say.
Right. So the topics I had to cover on Prepping 101 so far are food storage, savings, protection, and gear.
But let's just start with food storage for this week, shall we?
Right. We're going to start with food storage. And a little philosophy behind why you store food. It's like, I work retail, and I see every time the newscaster here in the South says, oh, there's going to be some snow flurries. Every idiot and their mama comes in for bread, milk, and eggs.
All of those are extremely perishable.
Kind of, but not really. Bread I don't want to eat anyway, and milk, not really, but heavy cream, I've had in my fridge for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time. The eggs, on the other hand, though, and even store-bought eggs, like I read a Mother Earth News experiment article they did,
mm-hmm.
For different ways to store eggs for long-term storage. And they covered like the sawdust method, the crystal glass method, a bunch of other methods. And a lot of these eggs, I think they did some like store-bought eggs, but most of them were like from the hand, unwashed eggs because they have a protective coating on them.
Now, believe it or not, back in the day, we actually used to eat eggs that, I mean, I've personally myself eaten eggs that were 2 months past their expiration date, but they'd been in the refrigerator the entire time. I mean, they last right. A lot longer than those expiration dates say that they do.
Right. So, and a part of the experiment they did was one of the preserving methods was they just set the eggs on the kitchen counter. And they would try these eggs, I think it was at month intervals or week intervals.
Really?
They would try an egg, like, they would store it for 1 month, and then you go eat the egg, and they're like, oh, it tastes fine. So at the end of 6 months, the eggs that were just laying on the kitchen counter started to have a little funky consistency.
Yeah, but it took it to getting to the 6 month mark.
And they were still edible at 6 months, but they were kind of like, they had a runny consistency even after being cooked. They were fried eggs, and they started to not taste as good. So, yeah.
Still took half a year, and that's just sitting on a counter.
Yeah, so I easily, like, I have ignored every expiration date I've bought on eggs since then. I usually go through 18 eggs in a week or so. Because I eat 3 eggs a day at least. Sometimes if I cook something extra, like a hamburger, I'll throw an egg on top to get a little extra cholesterol in it. So, yeah, people run in there for eggs. And if it was, obviously not here, but if I was at home, if it snowstormed by us at home, I wouldn't have to leave the house for 3 months, we'll say. I'd probably run out of water before that, which we'll talk about later on. But yeah, people, I don't understand why people, the longest snowstorm we've ever had where you could not get out here in Tennessee, 3 days in the past 10 years, maybe, not even that, because I haven't even seen, maybe one day, we'll say maybe one day where the roads are a little sketchy, but then our road crews got taken care of.
About the last really big snow period that we've had was about 11 years ago, I would say. It was actually pretty rough. Snow stayed on the ground for, weeks at a time. The roads were staying pretty icy. That was around the time that I actually started dating the woman who would eventually become my baby mama.
Right. But, so yeah, once every couple years, once every like decade or so, we have like really sort of bad weather. Because I remember back in the 90s, we had a horrific ice storm here that closed down roads for about two weeks.
Oh, yeah. My dad was a cab driver back then.
Yeah.
It was pretty rough going. Right. I mean, he was still out there because man was just dedicated, but still.
Yeah. So, I mean, people are freaking out for, on average, what should be no more than 3 days.
Right.
If you don't have 3 days of food where you have to stay in your house, then you're wrong. I'm sorry.
You're doing something terribly wrong at
that point. Yeah. I mean, you may be down to like the Oreos in the back of the cabinet and the can of soup you don't care for.
Even if you have to drink all the soy sauce and eat all the tarragon.
Which, for me, I wouldn't even blink it 3 days. I mean, last time I counted, I did an inventory of every food I had stored and the caloric content of that. I had enough food to last 3 months solid.
3 months.
3 months, yeah. In my tiny one-bedroom apartment.
Now, that is prepping. And I'm sure you would actually have a lot more than that if you had the room to do that.
Right. Actually, I think now I have a bit more, because I don't eat it, but I, for prepping reasons, I stockpiled a couple 50-pound bags of rice.
I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, you never really know. I mean, everything could be going hunky-dory, and all of a sudden, boom, one day the government shuts down and a volcano opens up across the street.
Exactly. Well, for that, you're probably screwed, and there's no amount of food storage is going to save you. But getting into the first way, so we sort of covered... maybe you can't go out because there's an ice storm. Maybe there's a bad flu or H1N1. Maybe there's, you know, for some reason, you just can't go out the house.
Maybe Andy Dick just will not leave your driveway.
So you can't leave the house. Storing food, big thing. The other big reasons I believe in storing food is if, Mike, you go to work tomorrow, and you work for a fairly small one-man show business, right? Your boss, you talk to him, he's in the same room.
It's a mom-and-pop kind of organization.
Right. So you go into work tomorrow, and your boss is like, well, Mike, we're shutting the doors. We're done. You have no job. Pack your cubicle and go home. So you immediately have to worry about getting a job to put food on the table for your family. If you had 3 months of stored food... How much stress does that take off your shoulders right there?
That does take a bit of stress off.
That's 3 months of food. That's 3 months of safety for your family you've got stockpiled there. You know that your family's not going to die because you can't put food on the table.
And what little money I would have at that point could be better spent elsewhere.
Right. I mean, and another point is, if you're worried that you just lost a job, your family has 2 days worth of food in the fridge, and you've got no money saved, you want any job. You want something now because you need to make money.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got your food covered, you can walk in there and be picky. You could find the best job. You could find something that'll benefit you better in the long run than snapping at the first thing that comes your way. Right. And you're not going into the hiring office desperate and like begging for a job.
Some of the worst decisions in the world have been made due to desperation.
Right, right. Don't make a decision on an empty stomach because it's not going to be a good one.
Right.
So let's get into the hows of storing food.
And never go grocery shopping on an empty stomach either.
Oh my God.
Saying that.
So the first is a tried and true prepper technique called copy canning. I can't tell you sure who invented it, but I definitely accredit it to the late, great Ron Hood.
Now, I've never actually heard of copy canning.
I'm going to explain it to you.
Alrighty, then.
So, let's say, what's a canned food that you eat regularly? What do you eat? Well, I mean, what's something you have a lot of that you usually always buy when you go to the grocery store?
Spam.
So, let's say you go to this grocery store, and you're like, well, this week, I'm going to pick up a can of Spam because I know I'm going to eat a can of Spam this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you eat, like, say, a can of Spam every week, this week you pick up 2 cans of Spam. You're out an extra $3.50, $4 maybe for a can of Spam.
Well, I usually get the generic stuff. That way, I mean, it tastes just as good, and it's usually half the price.
So, I think generics Walmart brand spam is like 250-ish or so. So you're on an extra 250. You've got an extra 250.
Right.
I mean, no matter what, you've got this, you're not even going to notice that in your grocery bill. One extra can of spam.
Mm-hmm.
You just put that in the back of your pantry. The next week you go out to go buy it, you still have that one can of spam left.
But you go ahead and get another
two cans. But you go ahead and buy another two cans of spam. You know, and after a couple weeks, you've got enough spam to last you a while, you move on to something else. You're like, well, you know, I ate a lot of canned tomatoes. I'm going to buy two cans of canned tomatoes this week. And you do that. And after, and I did this. This is how I started out with all the canned foods I eat, the collard greens and canned tomatoes and spam and potted meat and stuff. After a couple months of doing this with no noticeable difference to your grocery bill, you've got a packed up full pantry.
That is very true, and we've accidentally got a pretty full pantry in there.
Yeah.
A lot of canned goods in there.
And another flip side of that is, this can save you money.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the grocery store this week, and you notice, for some freak reason, spam has jumped up a dollar. Well, I don't need it this week. I've got an extra can.
Yep.
You go back to the next week. Oh, it's back to normal. Let me pick up my two cans.
I mean, now we've actually hit hard times, and I mean, who hasn't in this right. world? And where we've had unexpected expenses, car breakdown, something like that. And a bunch of our money has to go elsewhere. And we have somehow, on those occasions, we will make what we bought a week's worth of groceries last 2 weeks because of all the extra stuff that we've had squirreled away in our pantry. Yeah. I mean, in a pinch, and thanks to a lot of watching of the Food Network, Chopped and stuff like that, I can pretty much throw a meal together out of some really weird stuff.
Yeah. Creativity and cooking your prep meals is a very big thing. And I didn't even touch on it in my outline for this. But oddly, for example, one year, it was New Year's Eve, and I was at home alone. I didn't feel like going. I didn't want to go out and didn't want to do anything. So I was thinking, I was like, I think I could cook an entire New Year's Eve meal from my food preps.
I've never actually heard of a New Year's Eve meal before.
Well, New Year's, you know, like the ham, and you've got the black-eyed peas.
I usually just think of martinis.
No. Is it New Year's Day? No, it's New Year's Eve. This is PG-13 New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay.
I mean, growing up, my family always did this. Like, you would put, like, I think a penny in your black-eyed peas, and if you find it, you have good luck for the year or something.
I wouldn't want to cook copper in my black-eyed peas.
It works fine.
It does?
Yes.
No,
I didn't do it when I approved it. But yeah, in my food preps, I happen to have a can of ham, DAC ham. I happen to have black-eyed peas. I think I had foil-packed mashed potatoes. So I made an entire, like, New Year's Eve spread all from my food preps.
Which can be pretty awesome. Now, I know a lot of people out there, they know canned foods don't always taste as good as non-canned foods. But survival's not about luxury. Survival is about survival. And as one of my favorite survivalists out there has one time said before, and I am paraphrasing Mr. Les Stroud, the best seasoning to food is hunger.
That is true. And creativity helps out a lot. Both of us can make some bland food taste pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, with a minimal amount of ingredients this evening, I made a pretty darn good spaghetti sauce that everybody who had it basically told me that you can't buy anything out of a store that tastes that good.
No. So up next, I've got the infamous rice and beans. So obviously, being paleo, I don't eat rice or beans, but I have pretty considerable amounts of both stored.
Now, why is it? I mean, they always, like, on a lot of the survival shows, like I watched the show Ultimate Survival Alaska.
Okay.
For each leg of the competition, they give every competitor in it 2 pounds of rice and beans. Like a pound of rice, pound of beans, or 2 pounds of rice, two pounds of beans, whatever. And this is supposed to last them like three and a half days, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, supplement about whatever they can hunt or catch or whatever while they're out there. Now, I can understand, you know, some protein can come from the beans, but why rice and beans do they always, is that always a preferable survival choice?
Basically, they have near infinite storage life. Dried beans and dried rice, you don't even need to, like, a lot of preppers will take, like, oxygen absorber methods and like Mylar packing their rice and beans, you could just throw it in a bucket and let it sit there.
Excuse me.
And it'll be fine. So storageability is a big reason why those things are food preps. They're fairly caloric dense. They may not be the most nutritious choices, according to my food guidelines, but in a shit hit the fan scenario, they will keep you alive.
And that's what survival is.
Right. So, and the flip side of this is, another reason why I store some rice and beans is, and I can't remember who I heard say this, it's a lot easier to give your neighbor a bag of rice than it is to shoot them. So, if my hungry neighbors come to me, I've got a little bag of rice. Yeah, you can have this. This is about all I have. This is all I can spare, but you can have this. You know, and for friends, you know, if you guys are starving, I've got some rice I can give you. It may not be the tastiest or the best thing, but you can eat it and you will not die. So, rice and beans. Even if you don't care to eat them like I do, there's a good case to store them. And they're cheap. They're so cheap. Last time I went to, there's a store here in Nashville that I went to called Cash and Carry. They used to go to the Robert, or they used to be called the Robert or Cisco store. They're basically a bulk food supplier for restaurants. And they've got
a place down on Charlotte.
Exactly.
Right near Richland Park. I know exactly where that is.
Yep. So they've got, I think it's 25 or 50 pound bags of rice for $14 or something.
Really?
So, you know, I pick up one of them whenever I'm in the neighborhood.
Huh.
I mean, $14, you don't even notice it, really. Hmm. Just throw it in the closet and let it sit there. So, up next, I've got salt. I store a lot of salt. It has a million survival needs.
It's good for preservation.
It's good for food preservation. It's good for... Your body needs salt. You gotta have it.
Interestingly enough, a lot of scientists now believe that humans, as a race, are basically all addicts on salt because we were evolved in a environment richly laden with salt.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they believe that at first, you know, humans did not specifically need salt, but because we were surrounded salt all the time, we kind of became addicted to it.
I can believe that.
Encoded into our DNA, but continue.
Right. So, yeah, I store... I probably have 100 pounds of salt stored. Several little things of iodine salt.
Seriously, 100 pounds?
Yeah, well, I went to the food line there in my town where I live, and they had some big bags of salt, like 25-pound bags of salt on clearance for like $1 or something.
Good God almighty.
So I bought all that they had.
Well, then again, it is one of our most abundant resources on the planet.
Right, and then I've got several little, like, 4-pound tubs of iodine salt and kosher salt.
What's the difference with regular table salt and iodine salt? What's that
all about? It's just added mineral. I mean, we need iodine. I don't use it for a lot. I use the iodine salt, which is like 97 cents per 4 pounds or something.
Good God.
I use it for cleaning my cast iron for the most part. And I use the kosher salt to cook with. So, the flip side, the other part of that is condiments and spices. I started buying the very large tubs of spices for basically, I divide them up into smaller packages and use that. So, with the bland food we're talking about, having a plethora of Louisiana hot sauce and soy sauce, or tamari in my case, Montreal steak seasoning. All those sorts of seasonings are great to spice up your very bland food.
That's why Columbus came halfway around the world.
Right, so definitely stock up on your condiments and spices. A lot of them, mustard, Tabasco sauce, hot sauce, will store for long times, don't need refrigeration, you're good to go on them. All the spices, you're good to go. Next, after you've basically mastered, you've copy cans, you've got a couple, like a deep pantry at that point, you've got your rice and beans set aside and stored.
You got a whole human's worth of salt.
You've got, 100 pounds of salt, or however much salt you need. It's so cheap, you can, like, take $20 down there, and you're good for salt for couple years. Next, you want to look into some long-term storage options. Number 10 cans from companies like Mountain House, Provided Pantry, and Thrive brand from Shelf Reliance. So I've got a couple of number 10 cans, probably not as much as I should, but they're expensive and I don't really use them that much.
What is a number 10 can?
It's the big, like, big type metal coffee can.
Oh, okay.
The sizing on that is called a number 10. Why That's the number 10 size.
Huh.
It might be 10 inches. I'm not sure. So it's called the number 10 can. I think the small normal kitchen cans are like the number 4s. So it's a number 10 can, and it's filled with freeze-dried materials. I've got freeze-dried beef chunks, freeze-dried celeries and onions. I think I have peanut butter powder. So I have a good selection of like number 10 cans with 25-year shelf lives.
I didn't even know they had peanut butter powder.
They do.
Is it like dehydrated peanut butter or something?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It apparently lasts longer.
Most dehydrated things do.
Right. I mean, I don't eat it really, but I have regular cans of peanut butter stored. I mean, it's a legume, so it's not paleo, but I'm definitely willing to like break the paleo rule for peanut butter for an apocalypse.
I used to sell dehydrated water packets to all the kids on the short bus.
I bet you did.
Yeah, made a killing off that.
Yeah. So number 10 cans, and along with number 10 cans, we'll include MREs with that. At the gun show last weekend, I picked up, the guy had a bucket full of vegetarian MREs. He was selling for $2.53 a piece.
I've never even heard of a vegetarian MRE.
There's apparently several different flavors of vegetarian MRE. Vegetarian burger, and vegetarian lasagna. And so I don't really care for MREs that much, or especially the vegetarian brands, but at $3 for a meal, I made an exception. So I just threw them in my car and left them in there. So if my car breaks down, I've got food for probably 3 days.
There you go.
And at home I have I've got an MRE covered, a case of MREs covered with a blanket as my end table in my living room. So that's 12 MREs in the case. Well, it was 12. I got into it and ate a few, so I need to order a new case.
Yeah.
So, and then lastly on the food storage, to wrap up the Prepping 101 series here, is water. Water is the life source. You've got to have water, clean drinking water. You've got to have water for daily activities.
Now, you can survive several days without food. You could survive up to 12 days without food. You cannot survive that long without water.
No, I think 3 days? I think it's 3 days without water. And, you know, I've seen, like, stories of people pushing it behind that, but they are not in good shape when they're rescued.
No, not at all.
So, I try to go by the general rule of thumb of 1 gallon per day of water storage. So, even in my tiny apartment, I think I've got 30 days of water stored.
Wow.
And just the weight adds up, and I can't store more than that.
Right.
I bought a couple of the big, what is it, 15-gallon, 5-gallon, the big, like the office cooler.
Exactly.
So,
okay.
I've got a couple of them stored that I got from Sam's Club, and then when I used to drink 2 liters of soda, I would keep the bottles and fill them with water and store them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got several of them stored around. On top of that, you also want to keep a way to purify water. Simplest, of course, is something to boil water in.
Mm-hmm.
I've got iodine. I've got tablets, water filters.
And so, it is possible to actually boil water in a plastic bottle.
Yeah, I've seen that over a fire. Mm-hmm. You can, and it's kind of iffy, but you can sterilize water from UV radiation by keeping it in a plastic bottle, like a 2-liter bottle, on your roof during the entire day.
Really?
The UV radiation will sterilize the water, but it takes hours.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And I wouldn't trust really iffy water sources with it.
No,
if it's from a clean stream and you use UV radiation to purify it, yeah, probably.
Hmm.
But push comes to shove, I'd probably drink from a stream anyway. So yeah, we're actually running kind of long here on time. We're about to hit an hour. Okay. I'm going to wrap up the Prepping 101 with just food storage there. So what do we got next, Mike?
All right, well, it's that time again. Time to send out an invite to come on our show to one special survivalist celebrity out there. And this week, I'm going to pick somebody who actually might come on the show, seeing how he's currently out of a job right now. I would like to send a special shout out to Mr. Cody Lundeen, recently fired from Dual Survival. The reason why escapes me. We discussed that. If you want to know, just tune into last week's show. It's available at survivalpunk.com.
And iTunes and Stitcher.
But Mr. Cody Lundeen, one of my favorite survivalists out there, the man that wears shoes only at gunpoint, apparently. Please come on our show. This is an open door, open-ended invitation for any time in the near future. Somehow I think he's going to be calling us.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, well, I mean, we might offer him dinner or something. I really don't have the money to pay him. But,
I've got some bear meat.
Bear meat?
I have bear meat.
Where did you come about bear meat?
I actually traded Survival Punk shirts for bear meat and a rabbit.
Bear meat? What, a whole rabbit?
A whole rabbit. Frozen.
A whole frozen don't they usually sell those at, like, pet stores for people that own, like, Burmese pythons and shit?
I don't think they're skinned, though.
Oh, this is skinned?
Yeah, this is
no, like, no, processed. The ones for pythons are usually just, they're like, dead and frozen.
Yeah, rabbit's actually tasty. I made a braised rabbit in a rabbit sauce one time.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've seen Les sprouting an entire rabbit, brains, bones, and all. I mean, just cook the damn thing until it was nothing but, I mean, ate the bones on it, everything. He also discussed how you can get protein poisoning from rabbits, because they're just so lean.
That's bullshit. We won't even get into why it's bullshit today.
Well, anyway, Cody, please come on our show.
Right.
Alrighty, and I think it's time for our final ad of the day. I'd like to give a shout-out to those folks over there at Survival Gear Bags.
Yeah, Kelly John Doe over at survivalgearbags.com. He's a great longtime friend of mine with a great shop. He was actually the first person that ever offered me, like, gear for review.
Really?
Out of nowhere, I was on, the Survival Punk Facebook page, and I think I may have seen a picture of a gun cleaning product called Frog Lube. And Kelly was like, he saw that post, and he was like, hey, I sell that on survivalgearbags.com. Are you interested in some for review? Well, of course I'm interested in stuff for review.
And anybody out there who wants Mr. James over here to review their products, please feel free to send them to us.
Right. So, a friend of mine, Michael Dean, that runs the Freedom Fiends podcast, shout out to Michael Dean, he set me up with Kelly and as an advertiser. So head to survivalgearbags.com. Kelly also runs a TSP gear shop where you can buy Survival Punk merchandise.
All right, and where can they find? Oh, I know you just said survivalgearbags.com, but also
and
got a
survivalpunk.com.
Right, just look for the banner with the name on it. Well, we have had a hell of a show this week. This is actually going to be our longest show to date so far. We're already over an hour. That's pretty awesome.
Which, when I was doing the outline for the show, I was like, I think the prepping is going to run a little long. And Mike was like, oh, we've had some short episodes. Maybe we should let it run long. And we're over an hour right now, and I only barely finished food prep, and I was kind of running through.
Yeah, which is why that Prepping 101 is going to come a weekly segment instead of just one time.
Right. There. We may skip next week and cover another topic, but you'll hear the rest of the Prepping 101 series in the future.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up for us for Survival Punk Podcast and survivalpunk.com. I'm Mike.
And this is James.
And remember, although fire bows, pistons, magnifying lenses, friction, and spindles all work, just bring a lighter. It could save you 12 hours.